I'm proud to be a Jew, but that's way too Jewish for me.
Shalom, and welcome to the Two Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning on Two Jewish is comedian Ilan Gold. We'll also have visits from our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price, our two Jewish Mavenah on Israel, Oshrat Barel, and our Shinshinim, Barel Kachar, and Leah Avuno, and our Maven on Jewish Education, John Ben Asher. Please email your comments to us at twojewishradio18@gmail.com, or visit us on the web at twojewishradio.com. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Two Jewish.
Shalom. This has been quite a week here in America. If you stepped into a time machine way back in, say, January of 2015, and returned this week to find that Donald Trump had just been inaugurated as President of the United States of America, you would not have believed it. And yet, that's precisely what occurred a couple of days ago. With the inauguration of Donald Trump as president, we have definitely entered a new era. It will undoubtedly be different. It will surely be strange. And whatever else it will certainly be aggrieved. Because whatever you may think of the way things are working in the world, our new president has made it a habit of long standing to tweet out his resentment and harsh criticism of anyone and anything in society he feels has underestimated him, slighted him, or failed to appreciate his accomplishments and personal gifts. That is, to say the least, an unusual posture for a billionaire and television star who is now the leader of the richest and most powerful country in the world. For someone gifted with great wealth, fame, authority, power, and influence to constantly need to complain about how he has been slandered, wronged, and diminished by others is psychologically fascinating. And seeing him personally attack anyone he feels has failed to properly give him credit is morbidly compelling. It's like viewing video of a car accident after the fact. You really don't want to see it, but you just can't help watching. Donald Trump is not alone in our society, however, in believing that he has been given the short end of the stick. He might be the single individual with the least justification to claim that. He is, after all, rich, famous, and powerful in ways most of us can't even really imagine. But there's a kind of epidemic in America of groups and individuals who believe that they have been persecuted. As a Jew and a rabbi, I believe I have some authority to speak in this area of historical suffering. We Jews experienced fully 2,000 years of active, violent persecution, including torture, expulsion, and genocide. As the Mel Brooks character in the film My Favorite Year says to his non-Jewish girlfriend, "Catherine, we Jews know two things, suffering and where to find great Chinese food." Other minorities have suffered grievously through history, too. Gypsies, the Armenians, and the Kurds come to mind immediately. And in virtually every country, there have been groups in society who have been severely persecuted. Here in America, Native Americans suffered unfathomably at the hands of white settlers and the U.S. government. And African Americans were enslaved for centuries and discriminated against and attacked for another 100 years and more. The Mormons were literally chased across the country by intolerance and mob violence all the way to then barren Utah. There has been outright bias against immigrants from China, Japan, Ireland, Italy, Poland, Mexico, Guatemala, Vietnam, you name it, as well as religious bias against not only Jews and Mormons, but also for a long time Catholics here in America. And of course, women have been second-class citizens for most of American history. And homosexuals and others with complex sexual identities have always found acceptance very difficult and have often been actively and sometimes violently persecuted. Each of these groups and others have had legitimate reasons for having felt oppressed and had their human dignity violated by discrimination. But today we can add another list of those who feel they too have been persecuted. Evangelical Christians often have a sense that their deep beliefs have been challenged and ridiculed by the larger society. poor white Americans, particularly rural poor whites, have developed a strong sense of persecution, perhaps best described in the recent book Hillbilly Elegy by J.D. Vance. In fact, white Americans in general often have a feeling that the tables are turned to the extent that they no longer are even adequately represented in government or media. This led me to wonder, is there anybody left in America who doesn't feel that they are getting an unfair shake? You know, you would think that white Protestant billionaires holding high office would be the last group to feel that our great American Republic wasn't treating them well. But then along comes our kvetching tweeter-in-chief to defy even that notion. Maybe it's time to do what we all need to do to function well and to make our society better. Accept that life won't always be fair, that we each have the character and capacity to live meaningful, effective, valuable lives, and to improve our world, and that complaining, kvetching about the general unfairness of it all does no one any good at all. So stop already and go to work to make this a better country and, perhaps most importantly, a better world. To play us in this morning on this theme, here's a very funny song from the hit TV show Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, created by Rachel Bloom, a very Jewish character on a pretty Jewish show. It's called Remember That We Suffered.
Now it's time to celebrate. Grab a drink and fix a plate. But before you feel too great, remember that we suffered. Nights like these are filled with glee, noshing, dancing, singing, wee! But we sing in a minor key to remember that we suffered.
Being happy is selfish. Remember that we suffered.
You have no idea what pain is.
Remember that we suffered. Hey!
Such a crime for the Beastie Boys or Haim to mention in their songs one time. Remember that we suffered. I don't want to bring up the Holocaust. I know the Holocaust, but the Holocaust was a really big deal.
Remember that we suffered.
This DJ is terrific.
Remember that we suffered.
My grandma's a survivor.
Remember that she suffered.
The sweet and the bitter.
Remember that we suffered.
Streisand and Hitler.
Remember that we suffered.
Spielberg and Hitler.
Remember that we suffered.
We
suffered.
We
suffered.
I can't hear you.
Remember that we suffered. Hey!
That was from Rachel Bloom's show, Crazy Ex-Girlfriend. The song featured Patti LuPone and past two Jewish guests, Tova Feldsha. Crazy Ex-Girlfriend recently won a bunch of Golden Globe Awards, and it is, well, hilarious, if not entirely appropriate. Our guest this morning on Too Jewish, comedian Elan Gold, is definitely hilarious and, generally speaking, pretty darned appropriate. In the great line of Jewish comedians, don't miss one of the funniest who made a huge splash with his Talmud of Christmas trees just last fall. Meet Elan Gold when we return in just a moment here on Too Jewish.
Hi, Doris. How are you?
Well, Carol, to be honest, now that I'm a little older, I can't get out as much as I'd like. I miss seeing people.
Why don't you come over to my place for lunch on us? The food's delicious. So many choices. And I have a special table with my friends every day. They'd love to have you join us.
Is there much to do there?
There are lots of activities every day. Mondays is Mahjong. Tuesdays, I do yoga. Wednesdays, we go shopping or to the museum or a restaurant. Thursday is my exercise class. There are book groups, speakers, Shabbos services, concerts, a game room. I'm busier than ever.
Where do you live?
I'm at Handmaker. And the people are great. Please come over for lunch. You'll love it. It's even kosher. Just call me at 322-7035.
Handmaker Jewish Services for the Aging offers the full spectrum of quality senior living and post-hospital rehabilitative care. Call 322-7035. Handmaker for life. 322-7035.
Hi, my name is Lauriella, and I'd like to tell you how you can help send children like me to a Jewish day school at no cost to you. Arizona allows its taxpayers to receive a tax credit for payments made to recognized school tuition organizations such as JETCO. JETCO is the only tuition organization solely dedicated to Jewish education in Tucson. JETCO provides scholarships to children who attend qualified private schools like Congregation Anshai Israel's Kindergarten and Tucson Hebrew Academy, which educates students from grades K through 8th. You may give up to $1,087 for single tax filers and $2,173 for married couples who file jointly. Jewish education nurtures Jewish identity for generations of students like me, so please go online and visit our website at www.jetco.org or give JETCO a call at 647-8442. Again, that's 647-8442. And tell them Mariella sent you.
We are delighted to welcome to Two Jewish our guest this morning. Comedian Ilan Gold is a very funny comedian, actor, writer, producer. He had a viral video that I think everybody in Western civilization has now seen, which is one of the funniest pieces you will ever be encountered. Have you had much press from that?
A lot of press. By the way, when you said, as a Jew, I'm listening to this, you go, he had a virus, and I'm like, a virus? Why are you telling him about my virus? Yeah. It was last week, and I'm over it.
Your mother said you should be a doctor, right? So this is...
I like that that's in my credits. He had a virus recently. He didn't listen to it. He didn't take the flu shot. No, it was a viral video. It was very exciting, and I you know what was amazing about the whole thing is it came from Stand With Us is this incredible organization that I emcee all their gala dinners, and they tape these dinners, and I did this Christmas tree bit
By the way, I have to interrupt because we gave an award to Roz Rothstein, who helped start Stand With Us from my family foundation.
Roz Rothstein is one of my dearest and closest and probably one of the greatest humans alive.
Yeah, she's terrific.
Literally started a movement that is Stand With Us and anti-BDS, and she's like the gal. So I do it, and we tape it. I've been doing that Christmas tree bit for probably 2-3 years now and honing it and getting it right and just always playing with it and adding stuff and tinkering. And I would say a year ago it was like ready to go, and everyone kept saying to me after gigs, when are you putting this online? Like, we want to share this with friends. And everyone kept saying, I was like, gee, I wonder what would happen if I do in fact put this online. Because, you know, when you put stuff online, you burn material. That bit's dead. I can't do it anyway. Unless I get like requests to do it, I can't do it. People know it by heart. It's like a hit song I have. It's the weirdest thing. They do the lyrics with me. I could just start and then put the mic out and let the audience finish it. And it's literally like I'm a rock star with this little silly little bit. But anyway, so we tape that night. This is their event in New York City. And I closed with this Christmas tree bit. And I said, you know what? Let's release it on Thanksgiving Day because people, you know, they're bored. They're sitting there with their families. Everyone's annoyed at each other. And they want to avoid, you know, relatives. So they're on their phones and looking down and on computers and laptops. And I go, they'll start sharing it with everyone. And everybody's home and doing nothing. So let's just release it that morning. So literally that morning. Now, I'm in Israel at the time filming a web series for 3 weeks, this 10-episode web series. And we release it. It goes, like, within a day, hundreds of thousands. It was the weirdest. I've never had that experience. And the next day, I'm at the Kotel. You remember the Kotel, that place we used to have ownership now it's illegal?
Right, the stone wall that now belongs to the Palestinians.
Right. You're familiar with that.
I've seen pictures.
You're familiar with the only site that's holy to other religions,
right,
but not
right.
ours.
Not us, not you.
No, it's got nothing to do with us.
Right.
But anyway, so I'm there at the Kotel, and I start to get recognized. People are like, Christmas tree guy. And I'm like, what the heck is going on here? It was really weird. And then I couldn't walk into a shul in Tel Aviv or just walking the streets. And it was like this crazy phenomenon. And every crew member came over to me and said, look who WhatsApped me. Look who's this? It's you. My family WhatsApped you. It's this Christmas tree beat. Everyone's coming into the oh, my God, it's crazy. By the way, you know my latest observation about the Israelis, who I love. They're brilliant people, but they haven't mastered the English language. What they do is they take a word that's singular and make it plural, and a word that's plural and make it singular, right? They'll be like, you know, I heard a lot of story about this.
Yes.
But it reminds me in particular of this one stories, and I'm like, what? You know, when I eat soup, I like to pour a lot of crouton into my soup, but some peoples, they only put one croutons into their soup. It's weird. One crouton.
It's brilliant and captures something essential about the Israeli inability to distinguish singular and plural in English.
Right.
We will talk much more with Ilan Gold and find out what it's like for his parents to know that he has now achieved the status of being Christmas tree guy. When we return in a moment here on Two Jewish. We welcome our friends David and Pamela from Freedom Smoke. Good morning.
Hey, good morning.
You have a very wide range of ages in your clientele.
Yes, we do. Anywhere from 18 up to 90.
90. So people who are 90 decide they finally want to quit smoking.
Yes. They want to see their grandchildren or their great-grandchildren graduate high school and get married, go to college, that kind of thing.
It's incredible. What's the oldest person you've ever served?
Me personally, I had one that was 90. Last week, I had one that was 88. He's been with us for a couple of years and very, very pleased with how he quit, and his health is getting much better than it used to be.
You can breathe easier. You can smell things. You can taste things that you haven't been able to do so in years.
It's incredible. Where can people go to find out more information?
You can either visit us at our website at freedomsmokeusa.com, or you can call on our 800 number, 800-705-7013.
We have four stores around the greater Tucson area. We're in Catalina, Sierra Vista, and we're even in southern Michigan.
Thanks so much, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, kvetch, or a kvel, please email us at 2jewishradio18@gmail.com or visit our website at 2jewishradio.com, TOOJewishRadio.com. You can stream all past and present shows through the website or download us from the Apple iTunes Store as very popular podcasts, top 10 in America last year, according to Moment Magazine. We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
Anti-Semitism is very much in the news. We've been talking for a long time about anti-Zionist anti-Semitism on campus. We've now been discussing, particularly in the wake of the recent election campaign, alt-right anti-Semitism and increase in right-wing anti-Semitism. You had an interesting experience in that this last week.
Right. Just a few days ago was the first meeting of the class that I teach regularly at the University of Arizona, called A History of Antisemitism. And a couple of interesting things emerged, because we spend like the first half hour in the first session of each semester having students introduce themselves, talk about why they came to the University of Arizona, why they chose this particular course, what they know or don't know about antisemitism. And several of the things I heard from kids repeatedly may be of interest to your listeners. One was that they noticed right after the election an uptick in antisemitic incidents, graffiti, reports of hate crimes, et cetera, et cetera.
And swastikas scrawled, right, all kinds of stuff.
And they find it troubling that in this day and age, in the freest country on earth, that there are still manifestations of this very old, primitive, and to them, incomprehensible hatred. In this class, I should say that of the 10 or 12 kids, only two or three showed any sign of being Jewish, either in terms of their name or their self-identification or saying, I went to Hebrew school, whatever. The vast majority were not Jewish. One kid said very interestingly, I'm a senior. Since coming to the University of Arizona, I've met a lot of Jews. They all seem very nice. So I don't understand why so many people hate the Jews. I want to learn about that. Very straightforward. Another kid said something like, I know that the history of my people, the Armenians, has a lot of parallels to Jewish history in terms of genocides and diaspora and age-old hatreds. And I want to explore that because I know the Armenian side of that equation, but I know nothing at all about the Jewish side of that equation. And finally, quite a few kids said things like, as long as there are forms of genocide and violent incidents of hate crimes and racism anywhere in the world, I want to understand what I believe is the oldest form of hate crimes and genocide, and that is the long history of hatred of the Jews. So those were sort of their goals for the semester, and I certainly hope to be able to help them accomplish those goals.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's important for people to understand anti-Semitism is race hatred, and race hatred is not restricted to us.
Absolutely.
Thanks, Tom. We'll talk next week.
I look forward to it.
We welcome our Mivi Naan, Israel Oshrat Bar-El, head of the Weintraub Israel Center. Boker Tov, Oshrat.
Boker Tov, Rabbi.
So a lot of news about Israel. We talked last week about the UN resolution against Israel, U.S. not vetoing it, and the kind of personal response that people have to it. At the same time, we had a really fine example of Israel as a country in which the rule of law prevails this last, not too long ago, in the conviction of Azariah, the Israeli soldier who shot the Palestinian terrorist who was incapacitated. But the response in Israel is very interesting. Can you talk about that?
Yes, I would say that if you will ask me if one shot can, you know, split the whole, you know,
society
in Israel, the answer is yes. Because from the first moment that this happened and, you know, minutes after it was in the media, you can see that from, you know, the last person, you know, in the street, as we say, in the Rehov, to the prime minister and to the Ramatkal,
the head of the chief of staff of the IDF.
Yeah.
Right.
Like, everyone had an opinion and not everyone the same opinion. It was, and it was so opposite. Some of them just defend Elor Azariad, that's the name of the soldier, for doing the right thing. He wanted to defend himself and the people around him, even though the pictures, and I'm not a lawyer, and I'm probably...
Yeah, there was video, it showed pretty clearly the guy was down, his hands were tied.
But the video showed that he was, you know... There is no weapon next to him, and I really feel sorry for him and for the family and for the circumstances that brought us and Israeli to really kind of lose the sense of pure justice and to know what to do in the moment of emet, in the moment of,
moment
you
of
know,
truth,
of
right?
truth. And but and it's happened like for the past, I think it's 9 months already. But it, whenever, like in the last week or so, that he was convicted, you definitely saw again all over the society and politician and just friends of it's. You can't say that all those who are under whatever age or economic situation is supporting. It's just, I don't know how to explain it in English, and I feel sorry for that. But it's just so many of different people in the society support Elor and so many others. Can you explain it in English? Like, it's really...
Yeah, it basically divides society, the bifurcation
like
of people.
Over.
And it
yeah.
and it's not based just on your
anything.
Socioeconomic or that
gender,
you're a Sephardi
age,
or an Ashkenazi.
Nothing.
Or anything
it's
else.
Just,
it's just people at all levels have very different opinions. You know, when I think about it, it's a moment of insanity, right? A soldier sees people attacked by a terrorist. The terrorist is incapacitated. He walks over and he shoots the terrorist in the head. I'm sure these things have happened throughout history in every country in the world. I'm sure they've happened with American soldiers. I know they've happened with Israeli soldiers. Undoubtedly, they've happened with the soldiers of lots of other armies. Having said that... if you do not then convict the soldier, you have now defined that kind of behavior as permissible.
You define new values to the IDF.
Right. And even if you have great respect for the IDF and the sacrifices that the men make and the women make in serving the country and the dangers that they're put in and many die, you have to have that rule or you're no better than the people you're attacking.
Thank you for speaking my thoughts.
Thanks, Oshron. We'll talk next week. Hopefully happier subjects.
Toda rabai.
If you or a loved one is dealing with a cancer diagnosis, managing the healthcare maze might be one of the hardest things you ever do. We're Advocation Services, private patient advocates serving Tucsonians living with cancer. We focus on helping you while you focus on getting better. Visit us at advocationservices.com or call us at 616-0005.
Is your aging loved one unhappy and having a hard time adjusting to life around them? The TMC Geropsychiatric Center at Handmaker may be able to help. TMC Geropsych specializes in providing short-term inpatient services for older adults experiencing behavioral health issues. Did you know that most people with depression get better when they seek help? With the right treatment, those with anxiety can overcome and learn to cope with their fears, and individuals with dementia can continue leading quality lives. Our team, led by a geriatric psychiatrist, brings expertise from disciplines across a variety of specialties to ensure your loved one receives the right diagnosis and treatment. For more information about our services, please call 324-4600. The TMC Geropsychiatric Center at Handmaker. Call 324-4600. Let's talk about how we can help.
We welcome our maven on Jewish education, John Ben Asher, head of the Tucson Hebrew Academy. Good morning, John. Boker Tov.
Boker Or. Good morning. Happy Sunday.
Happy Sunday. Sunday used to be a very religious day in America. Mm. Lots of things were closed. Not so much anymore.
The Sabbath.
Yeah. And even for Jews, it was sometimes a little bit of a strange time. But still, it meant that religion was important.
Yeah.
Is religion as important for Americans as it used to be? And how does a Jewish day school deal with that particular challenge?
Sure. What a great question. And it's kind of one of those questions for the ages. I imagine that in every generation, people scratch their heads and say, what happened? Have we lost some of our values? And what are we doing? Who are we? So, you know, I guess it depends on your family, where you live, and what your values are about in terms of religion being important. Some people would argue that it's alive and well, and it's a core component of their life and their lifestyle. Other people, not so much. And there are some who even believe we're living in a secular age where religion seems to be fading in the background. So what does a Jewish day school do in this kind of an era? Well, we are who we are. We know who we are, and we love to share who we are with our families, with our community. You know, our job is to continue to bring our rich heritage and culture and traditions and values and beliefs down through the ages. Even though, you know, we have all this modern technology, and there may be a sense that some aspects of society are disconnecting from those kinds of religious and older roots, it doesn't mean that there isn't value and there isn't importance in what we do today. And you can be as quote-unquote religious as you want to be. Being Jewish doesn't necessarily mean a practicing religious Jew. There are so many different components. I remember growing up, I was told that, you know, being Jewish is seven different kinds of things. And yes, there's Torah and there's religion at the core, but there's also other ways of expressing and being a Jew. There's culture, there's tradition, there's community, there's Israel. So while we teach how to be a Jew and how to understand concepts about God and what God means and how to learn from Torah and practice a religious life, graduates go on to make choices for themselves. Our job is to provide the tools and the background and the foundation so that people know how to be a Jew and know how to practice a Jewish life, and the decisions that they make as they get older and raise their own families is up to them.
You know, I think people have this concept that values somehow emerge out of the air, but in fact, almost always they have a religious basis.
They have to be taught. It's not automatic.
Got to be taught. Thanks, John. We'll talk next week.
Have a great week, everybody.
When we come back on Too Jewish, we'll hear the old Jewish joke of the week.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
It's time now for our old Jewish joke of the week. Jewish humor, your Bubby and Zadie New, brought to you by Too Jewish as a public service. Three Jewish brothers get together to talk about the gifts they sent their mother for her 90th birthday. Milton is a successful doctor, Marvin is a powerful lawyer, and Melvin is a prosperous businessman. It's too bad their aged mama lives so far away in another city, but they really have gone all out. The eldest brother, Milton, says, I had a big new mansion built for Mama. The second son, Marvin, says, I had my Mercedes dealer deliver a fancy limousine with a Mercedes-trained German chauffeur. The third son, the youngest, Melvin, said, listen to this. You know how Mom loves reading the Torah. Mama can't read anymore because she can't see so well. So I met this rabbi. He told me about a parrot. It can do the whole Torah with full commentary. It took 20 rabbis 12 years to teach the parrot. I had to contribute $1 million to the temple, but let me tell you, it was worth it. All Mama has to do is name the Torah portion, and the parrot will chant it and give a beautiful commentary. All the brothers are impressed by every gift. Soon after her 90th birthday, Mama sends her sons thank you notes. She writes, it's a shame none of you could make it here for my birthday because you're such big shots now, but thank you for your gifts. First, Milton. The house you built for me is so huge. I live in only one room in the kitchen, but I have to clean the whole house. Well, thanks anyway. Next, Marvin. I'm too old to go anywhere. What for do I need a fancy car, a Mercedes? I stay home. My groceries are delivered. I never use the car except to go to the doctor. Plus, that German driver you hired is a Nazi, and he's eating me out of house and home. But the thought's the thing, so thanks. Ah, but my dearest Melvin, she writes, you were the only son to have the good sense to give a little thought to your gift. The chicken was delicious. That was the Old Jewish Joke of the Week, special feature Too Jewish, just for you. You should live and be well. And now a word of Torah. This week we continue with the truly greatest story ever told, the Exodus narrative of slavery, plagues, and liberation. As this week's portion of Va'era begins, the Israelites are in Egyptian slavery, and the mysterious figure of Moses returns to free them from bondage, or at least to try. In Va'era, God brings about a series of plagues that traumatize the Egyptians and bedevil the Pharaoh, king of Egypt. Blood, frogs, lice, wild beasts, boils, and cattle disease serially afflict the land and its inhabitants, or at least the non-Israelite inhabitants. In next week's portion of Bo, four more plagues come: hail, locusts, darkness, all leading up to the climactic death scene, the slaying of the firstborn, and the ultimate exodus, great moment in which our ancestors are freed from slavery, the model for narratives of deliverance and emancipation ever after. These plagues are interesting in and of themselves. There are three sets of three plagues each, increasing in severity and complexity, every one designed to prove the power of the true God and the impotence of the pagan gods of Egypt. The Nile River was a principal deity of Egypt as well as the source of its life and livelihood, and so, for the first plague, God simply turns it into blood. There are frog gods in the Egyptian pantheon, and they are next turned into pests that infest homes and fields. The scarab is a sacred beetle to Egyptians, a symbol of the pharaoh's power, and insects are next used to torment the inhabitants, and so it goes. Sacred cows get diseases. The fertility of the land of Egypt, sacred itself, is destroyed. Finally, even the great Ra, the holy solar disk of the sun itself, is blotted out for days of darkness. The plagues are a statement of theology. There is only one God, and those who adhere to other gods and use their own power to enslave others will be overthrown with power and majesty. The arrogant will be overcome. Freedom will be guaranteed, and justice through the true God will triumph. It's a message that still has resonance today. Whenever we come to believe that evil is destined to reign, that those who enslave others will rule, and that those who use their control for malign and selfish purposes are destined to flourish, we should reread this plagues narrative in Exodus. For, at heart, this is a universe created by God for good. When we increase justice, we are simply doing the work for which we were all made. When we return on To Jewish, our guest, Ilan Gold, one of the funniest comedians working today, will explain what it is that makes Jews funny and how he manages to be both very funny and very Jewish, but not too Jewish, except today, of course, when he joins us again. We return in a moment here on To Jewish. We welcome John Ben Asher, head of school for Tucson Hebrew Academy. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Rabbi Kohan.
Tell us about THA.
THA is an incredible school, rich community, strong educational culture. We're a K-8 program and Tucson's only Jewish day school.
With small classes, really a tremendous level of individual attention.
Absolutely. Our engaging, talented faculty ensure a rigorous, interactive, supporting learning environment for kids.
And those kids go on to succeed academically. This isn't just about Jewish identity.
THA graduates go on to Tucson's best high schools, and they are exceptionally well prepared.
And I've seen some of them go to Ivy League schools, some of the best colleges in the country too, if that's important for parents, which I believe it is.
That's right. THA really paves the way for students. A rich, strong academic foundation, as well as Jewish knowledge, learning, and culture.
And great community. How can people find out more about putting their kids in THA?
You can come visit or find us online, thaaz.org, and give us a call, 529-3888.
That's 529-3888, or visit www.thaaz.org.
If you or a loved one is dealing with a cancer diagnosis, managing the healthcare maze might be one of the hardest things you ever do. We're Advocation Services, private patient advocates, serving Tucsonans living with cancer. We focus on helping you while you focus on getting better. Visit us at advocationservices.com or call us at 616-0005.
We continue with our Too Jewish update on news of Jews around the world with commentary.
Achenu, achenu. In a surprising development, last week, Great Britain blocked the Paris Peace Conference called by the European Union from endorsing a two-state solution for Israel and the Palestinians. Although the UK called for and voted for the earlier UN resolution criticizing Israeli settlement activities, a block to peace, British Prime Minister Theresa May later blasted then-US Secretary of State John Kerry's speech about Israel in the Middle East. And this week, England stopped the EU from adopting strong language criticizing Israeli settlements and endorsing a two-state solution. Instead, the Paris Peace Conference adopted a brief and benign statement offering economic incentives in the unlikely event that Israel and the Palestinians manage to craft a peace accord directly. British Foreign Minister Boris Johnson didn't participate in the conference at all. Neither did Britain's ambassador to Paris. Instead, the United Kingdom sent a low-level functionary expressing its displeasure with the French. Britain said it had reservations about the outcome of the peace conference, saying it risked hardening positions. We have particular reservations about an international conference intended to advance peace between the parties that does not involve them, indeed, which is taking place against the wishes of the Israelis, and which is taking place days before the transition to a new American president, when the U.S. will be the ultimate guarantor of any agreement, the British Foreign Office said. There are risks that this conference hardens positions at a time when we need to be encouraging the conditions for peace. In other news, more than five centuries after the Jewish community of Sicily was expelled and its property confiscated, a space has been designated that is to become a new synagogue and cultural heritage center. Last week, the Roman Catholic Church in Palermo, Sicily, ceded to Jewish ownership the use of part of a church and monastery complex built on the ruins of a medieval synagogue. The move is a kind of gesture of reconciliation 525 years after the expulsion of Jews from Sicily. The church will finance renovations in the space for the several dozen Jews who now live in Palermo. The space is in the Oratory of Santa Maria del Sabato, in a building under the church complex of San Niccolo da Tolentino. Rabbi Pier Paolo Pinchas Puntarello has been sent as an emissary to Sicily by Shave Yisrael, an organization that focuses on outreach to Jews who have lost connection to their Jewish roots or identity. Most of the Sicilian congregation that is forming, most of the people, are B'nai Anusim, the descendants of Jews forced to convert to Catholicism under Spanish rule. Based in Israel, Puntarello serves as Palermo's rabbi, coming once a month from Israel to Palermo, Sicily. The handover of property took place during a conference January 12th, the anniversary of the expulsion of Jews from Sicily by the Spanish rulers way back in 1493. Shave Israel's founder and chair, Michael Freund, played a key role arranging the donation of the space. The Archbishop of Palermo, Corrado Lorefice, transferred ownership of the space to the Jews. There is no formal Jewish community in Palermo. The owners will be a local cultural and educational organization. The Jewish community of Sicily dated back to Roman times, more than 2,000 years, and flourished for close to 1,500 years. As part of Spain's persecution of the Jews after the completion of the Reconquista, Ferdinand and Isabella decreed the expulsion of the Jews of Sicily in 1492, and no formal Jewish community returned in the next 500 years plus until now. Improbably, there will again be a synagogue and Jewish center in Sicily. And Yuri Forman, former junior middleweight boxing champ and an ordained Orthodox rabbi, lost his bid for the World Boxing Association's super welterweight world title last week. Defending champion Arislandi Lara defeated Forman on Friday night in Miami. Forman is 36 years old, old for a boxer. The referee stopped the bout in the fourth round when Forman was hit with a left uppercut and unable to continue. This is the first time in his career that Yuri Forman fought on a Friday night, Shabbos. That will teach him the fight on the Jewish Sabbath. Being a rabbi, Forman said, it's sometimes very interesting to mix that with fighting, but Friday night I won't be in rabbi mode, I will be all fighter. Forman immigrated first to Israel and then the U.S. from Belarus. He lives in Brooklyn now. In 2013, Forman quit boxing after losing his title to Miguel Cotto at Yankee Stadium 3 years earlier and sustaining a series of injuries. He was the first Orthodox Jew to win a world boxing title in over 70 years. During his hiatus, Forman was ordained a rabbi by Dovber Pinson, a Chabadnik based in Brooklyn, thus becoming the only rabbinic former world boxing champion that we know of in world history. And that's the Two Jewish News of Jews Around the World.
Our brothers, lawless.
welcome back to Too Jewish our delightful guest, Ilan Gold. He's the comedian. He has been on TV in a variety of series, and he has...
Oh, my goodness. But my most famous... Listen, I don't want to brag, Rabbi. I don't want to brag. And I've done a lot of television shows and 10 Tonight shows. I have a Netflix special that's out. But my biggest credit, I think, with this audience is that I have hosted the Chabad Telethon.
Oh, my God.
Are you familiar with it? It's the
like
only
Chan
telethon.
Chan Murray?
I was a successor to Dan Murray. And you know, what I love about the Chabad Telethon is it's the only telethon with barely enough material to last 1 hour, yet miraculously lasts eight.
It's just like my sermons. It's like a Hanukkah special.
It is. How do you do it every week? So you've got to write new stuff. I could do the same thing over and over.
Actually, I've often, like on the high holidays, like to get up and say, do you remember what I said last year? And if they don't answer, I just do the same sermon.
Funny.
That's what tshuva becomes. It's return. Sorry.
I love that. You know my joke about rabbi. Should I share it with
yes,
you?
Yes, I think you should.
Oh, my goodness. Well, I have this bit that I say I could have been a rabbi because I know the technique that rabbis use. They learned it from journalists. Journalists, when you're writing a story, to make it compelling, you have to answer something called the six W's, right? And that's who, what, when, where, why, and how, which has a W at the end, so they counted it. This is a real thing, the six W's that journalists do. Rabbis, if you watch their speeches very, very closely, you can see them counting to make sure, on their hands, to make sure that they don't miss one of the W's. So this is my impression of every rabbi's speech. Now, it's a good bit, but you need, for radio, it's not the best, because I'm literally using my fingers every time I count. But this, you get the idea.
But my friends, you can use your fingers at home. Just follow Ilan. Here we go.
Start with the thumb, then pointer, and everything. Okay, so here's the six W's of the rabbi speech. There's a saying, this is every rabbi speech, there's a saying in Judaism, which is what? That's one of the W's.
Okay.
Do unto others as you would do unto yourself. Now, where do we see this and who said it? We're up to three now, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
We see it in the Torah and it was said by God. Why? Why did he say it? Why he said it so that we should institute it into our daily lives. But how? How do we institute? How? By being kind to our fellow man. And when? Always, always, always be kind to your fellow man. Good Shabbos. That is every rabbi speech. All six W's covered.
Brilliant.
Done.
Gosh. You know what? I may start using that every week.
But we have to talk about something that's exciting that I just did, because Hanukkah was over a few weeks ago, you know, a couple weeks ago. We had a nice little Hanukkah, everybody.
Yeah, and some of us have even cleaned up from it, but others still have menorah wax on the carpet.
Yes, that's what we have. The non-Jews keep their trees up till February. We've got the menorah wax on the carpet till February.
Yeah, at least.
You know, every year in Los Angeles, where I live, I do this show on Christmas Eve, and it's called Merry Erev Christmas.
Well, you are a Christmas tree guy, so let's keep going.
I'm a Christmas tree guy, so why not? But this was before I was Christmas tree guy. I was Mary Irv. And we do this at the Laugh Factory in Hollywood. It's become an L.A. institution. It sells out every year. Three shows. And it's me and other comedians. And it's such a fun night for the Jews. Because it's our night to come out and have fun and party.
But by the way, do you let non-Jews attend?
Of course we do.
I mean, if they're married, do they have to be married to Jews or children of
Not
Jews?
Not only do we let, we encourage. Because then I get to make fun of them and do all my stuff about the Goyim.
So I have a very important question. You know, your parents paid for day school. You went to Westchester Day School. And Marcia Stern Talmudical Academy. This is a serious yeshiva.
MTA.
Yeah, very serious yeshiva. You are using that material in your comedy act. Is this what they dreamed about?
They're very proud. Listen, it's nachas when even though it's about Christmas trees, what it really is it's a Talmudic bit. It shows my love of Talmud and that I'm learned. And still to this day, I learn Talmud and I love it. But it's my job as a comedian to just mock everything. It's just what we do. And if I want to make fun of, you know, some of our rules and how we go out there, and the whole premise just of that, thank God we don't have a tree because we'd have 1,000 rules, there would be another tractate of Talmud, is just perfect because it's true. And again, anything that's true, you make great comedy out of. But no, they're very proud of it because it honors the Talmud, you know, with a little light mocking on the side.
I have an important question. I always ask this for comedians and get very different and sometimes surprising answers. Who were your influences?
Oh, that's easy. That's easy. First of all, we got Billy Crystal. Billy Crystal is like, when I grew up watching Saturday Night Live, Billy Crystal and Martin Short, it was just like, oh my God, I want to be this guy. And they're just the best. Dave Letterman, huge, huge influence. Eddie Murphy, Steve Martin, and, you know, there's others along the way, but those are like, you know, we all have our top five it's those guys. But I grew up watching, you know, Carol Burnett and just admiring her like crazy, and all the great, you know, sketch performers from Saturday Night Live, and the weird thing is now I become like friendly with some of them, like Dana Carvey, and they go, all these guys that I grew up just admiring, you get to meet and hang out with and be friendly with, and it's just the craziest thing. I mean, I remember even Milton Berle. I had lunch with Milton Berle at the Friars Club in New York.
Goodness.
Yeah, and it was just like, it's so crazy when you get to meet legends and icons just because you're sort of up-and-coming young comedian, and suddenly you're fraternizing with them, and it's incredible. But it's just fun to be a comedian. You know, people always ask my wife, do you just laugh all day long? Do you just like? And it's like, no, she doesn't just laugh. Well, I'm not funny all the time. I'm not on all the time at all.
Right.
But when you're around other comedians, then we're pretty much, we have to one up each other, and that's when it's a big roast. You know, what was the question?
I don't know. I don't think there was one. I think I lost it a while back. But that's fine. That, you know, it was a good time.
Oh, my influences. Yeah, that's true. But Billy Crystal, big time.
All right. So my kids don't think I'm funny. But
by the way, Jackie Mason also.
Oh yeah. My kids don't think I'm funny, but they do think my Jewish parrot jokes are funny.
Can you give me one of those?
Yeah, any of them.
Let's hear one.
Well, the best one takes too long. It's about the guy who trains his parrot to daven for Rosh Hashanah, and he brings it in, and he has a lot of money wagered with the other guys from the minyan, and the parrot won't do anything when he brings him in, and they're all making fun of him, and he walks out, and he's cursing the parrot. He's going to kill the parrot, and the parrot says, "Shah, where do you hear the odds we get for Yom Kippur?"
Oh,
see,
God.
That's a classic joke, right?
Oh, God, is that funny.
Yeah, isn't that good?
Wow, that is a good joke. So your kids don't think you're funny? No, of course.
No, they don't, of course. Because
you
got to
discipline kids. Do you know I have four kids?
Maybe if I don't feed them unless they laugh.
That's what you have to do. You have to take the food away.
Yeah.
You're such a good father. I have a 16-year-old boy. Could you believe that? Like, literally, I can't believe that I am at the age where I have a boy who's 16. And, you know, there's a bit I'm working on about him, because once you turn 16, the weirdest thing happens to teenage boys. They stop using words, and they just make noises out of their mouth.
Like, yeah, there's no articulation.
You know what
gone.
I'm saying? No articulation. I'll say to them, hey, Brandon, we're going out to dinner. Want to come? Oh, dinner. It's like, was that, what'd you just say? And he's like, just finish your homework then. Oh, homework. That's just, everything is just, you know, sounds. It's the weirdest thing. It's either a question, do we have to do this? Or it's a statement.
What's your favorite Jewish joke?
Oh my God, there are too many. But, you know, I just mentioned Jackie Mason. The world, according to me, is the top three greatest hours in the history of recorded comedy. You know, I was just telling someone who was like, oh, your Hanukkah special was so funny, and we love your Netflix special. They go, yeah, they're good. But they're no the world, according to me, and nothing ever will be. You know, there are guys who like Richard Pryor, you know, Jackie Mason. Like, we'll, as much as we work hard to be as good as we can be, there's nothing like the world, according to me. And it's not just about a joke. It's about just everything he does and says is brilliant. But as far as like a sort of a Jewish joke, there are so many, you know, from the classic, you know, island, that's the shul I don't go to.
Yeah, I wouldn't be caught dead in, right?
Yeah. And then one of my favorites is also, I'm not sure I could do it on the air, but the punchline is, good schnabbis. That's the punchline. Good schnabbis. And I'll just say,
oh my God, I haven't heard that joke since I was in the Catskills as a young cantor.
Even though I did the punchline, I'll just give you a little of the premise. It's a couple who go to a therapist because they're not doing that well in the bedroom, trying to keep this clean. And then the therapist suggests because the husband wants more, the wife wants that. He goes, just do it, you know, on days of the week with ends. And then he starts bothering her Friday night, and she goes, what are you doing? You heard it with the, and he goes, good schnabbis.
a classic.
A classic. Yeah, just do Wednesday or wherever there's an N, you know, Sunday. What are you doing? Good schnabbis. That just makes me laugh. But, you know, I love old jokes. I love new jokes. I don't tell those jokes, though, because I sort of pride myself in just having observations and sharing them with the world and not just repeating old, you know.
A last question.
Oh, my goodness. Is it over already?
Yeah, I'm pretty near.
This is crazy.
That just means we have to get you back. Maybe you have to do an Easter Bunny. No, never mind.
Yeah. Do all the Goyish holidays.
All the Goyish. Well, they don't have any holidays. That's the whole problem with
they
not
don't.
Being Jewish. It's very distressing. I the sales at Filene's basement don't mean anything to non-Jews.
We literally have a holiday, like, every few weeks. Like, something going on.
Yeah, September, October, it's every day.
Oh,
it's
forget it. I think the only month we have off, ironically, is February, Black History Month. That's the only, like, all right, that's their month. We got nothing there. Let's leave it alone. Give it to them. That's theirs. Yeah, but then March, we start with the Purim, April with the Pesach, Shavuot. It doesn't stop.
It doesn't
February
stop.
Is our month off.
Yeah, February, that's right. Unless you count Tu B'Shvat when it falls. Never mind.
That's
so
funny.
You know, a lot of Jewish humor is because of the contrast. It's why we can talk about, and you know, the name Too Jewish, we kind of stole from Jackie Mason.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. I felt that. I felt the robbery, the thievery. I said, Too Jewish, that's Jackie Mason. No, but you're sort of honoring him. I guess.
Yes, there's no compliment like theft.
Right.
So, and that must be true in the comedy field as well.
Of course.
What, do you think American Jews are becoming too assimilated for the humor to continue to work in the same way?
No, not at all. Because there's, first of all, obviously in the Orthodox community where there isn't that much assimilation at all, they totally get all the inside references and all that. And even in the secular Jewish world, like I performed it at the AIPAC policy conference, and there were secular Jews and, you know, non-Jews, obviously, and then unaffiliated completely. And I just did sort of a Jewish act, and everyone got it, because when non-Jews come over to me and they'll be like, I totally got that because my best friend's Jewish, or I'm the Shabbos guy of my next door neighbor, or, you know, we live in a culture where everyone is aware of everyone else and what we're all doing, and it's very easy, unless you go really deep, and I have jokes like that you have to really experience, you know, jokes about being in a sukkah. If you weren't in a sukkah, you're not going to appreciate this jokes, or like even my joke about Seder plates. I say you can throw up on a Seder plate and no one would notice, you know. And you know, any joke that I have that if you haven't experienced it, then you lose a few people and they're like, wait a minute, I've never had a Passover Seder. I've never seen that there's some nauseating stuff on there, like a disgusting burnt egg and a shank bone that no one would ever eat. And, you know, a roset. There's nothing appetizing about a Seder plate. That's my little joke about you getting nauseous on it. And then that it's okay because you could throw up on it. No,
no. No, it looked like the charoset, actually.
Exactly. Yeah. Say, it would look and smell exactly as it did before you puked on it. But the point is, if you've never seen a Seder plate, you're just not going to get that.
Right.
But if you have, and you're even a cultural Jew, and you do have a Seder, then you enjoy it. So I try to do stuff that everyone enjoys, and I don't think that, you know, even with all the assimilation problems and all that stuff, I think people who are even at least culturally Jewish or identify as Jews, they get it. They see it. They understand it. Or their neighbor's Jewish.
I want to thank Ilan Gold for a terrific visit here on Too Jewish.
Thank you, Rabbi. This is this was one of the best sessions I've ever had with the rabbi without a Talmud in front of us.
Yeah, that's right. And nobody's rapping your knuckles or making you do it again. His website is Ilan Gold, ElonGold.com.
They can get the fun Hanukkah special there. It's really fun. It's $4.99. Portion of the proceeds go to Stand With Us, you know, Raz's organization.
Absolutely.
And then Netflix, they can watch the special. There's all sorts of good stuff that's online. And I'm coming soon to a theater near you with other fun projects. So you'll look out for the series I did in Israel, the web series called Bar Mitzvah. There's a lot happening. It's exciting. And thank you for having me. I had a great time.
Great pleasure. When we come back on Too Jewish, we'll hear about next week's guest, get a final musical play out.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
Thanks for being here this morning here on Too Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Join us next Sunday. Our guest will be Jewish recording artist, limerick author, and senior rabbi, the inimitable Rabbi Joe Black. And of course, listen to all of our podcasts on iTunes or at TooJewishRadio.com. Our playout this morning on Too Jewish comes from next week's guest, Rabbi Joe Black, Pete Chuli, with the Maxwell Street Klezmer Band. My friends, have a Shavua Tov, a good week, and a week, we pray, of peace.
Sponsored by Two Jewish Radio Programs, Tucson, Arizona.